Okay, that's Jenny Scheinman and Ripples in the Aquifer, which seem very appropriate for my guest, Elizabeth Papin-Silver. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello, Arnold.
Oh, it's great to have you here, and you can tell us all about your wonderful film, Slow the Flow.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm really thrilled to be on your radio show. Slow the Flow, Make Your Landscape More Like a Sponge, is all about stormwater runoff and the simple and inexpensive to almost free things that people can do around their homes and communities to help mitigate stormwater runoff, which is one of the largest contributors of pollution into our waterways, not just in California, but all over the United States.
And all around the world, really. It's lessons to be learned everywhere, I suppose.
Exactly.
Yeah. So tell me, how did you get to, you know, what brought you in your life story get to make a film about this? What brought you to it?
Well, I was very blessed to be hired by the California State Water Resources Control Board. It's the second film that I've made for them. The first one was called Working for Water and was a half-hour documentary all about the employees of the water boards and what they do in their job and the challenges that they face. That can also be seen on YouTube. Both of them are available free to watch on YouTube. And actually, if you contact the water board, they will send you a free copy, as many copies as you'd like.
Wow.
which is pretty neat. So they chose me because I've been making films now for about 14 years. Up until next week, I worked at KQED, the public television station here in San Francisco, and did independent films on the side. And they saw two films at film festivals that I did in the last few years, the first being called Coastal Clash, which I did for KQED, which was all about beach access and the problems with development along our coastline. And then the second film that they saw was a very different film I did independently with my former film partner, Sally Lundberg, and that was called One Winter Story. And it was about the first woman to surf Mavericks, the giant wave here in Half Moon Bay. So I guess they liked what they saw and emailed me and asked if I'd be interested in making films for them. And so the first one, I guess, did so well that they asked me last year to do Slow the Flow.
Oh, lovely.
Yes, pretty much all my filmmaking, and I also shoot photographs, seems to somehow be about water in some way. I'm kind of obsessed with it. I have been since I was a little kid.
Well, I believe you surf as well.
I do. I've been surfing for 25 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, it is a passion of mine and my husband's. I pretty much think about it every day of my life.
Now, have you done Mavericks?
No. That's one thing. I am the biggest chicken in the world, even though I've been surfing a very long time. I have no desire to surf anything over head high, so I stick to the baby pool like Bolinas and Pacifica, but it is thrilling to go out there and film, that's for sure.
Oh, fabulous. Fabulous. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. What a beautiful place to do it.
Exactly.
Along the coast here.
I look forward to going to work every day when I'm making films about water because what a cool thing to do, to get to be paid to, you know, stand at our coastline or along a river or even at a sewage treatment plant. I do it all. I love it.
Yeah, it's all one, isn't it? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And all related.
Right. Now, I really enjoyed your film. I saw it at the Wild and Scenic Environmental Film Festival up in Nevada City, and I was most impressed. And it really gave people real practical ways of changing things from their own backyard gardens to large construction projects. It showed that there is no limit to what you can do with saving and using water.
Yes, it's quite true. And I have to say that I'm impressed that the state government is trying different and entertaining ways to get out information and reach the public about really important issues. I mean, you know, these issues can be a little bit dry, no pun intended.
Yeah.
But they saw the value in making a documentary, a PBS-style documentary that, you know, not only entertains people and is pretty to watch, but it gets out really important information. So instead of doing the usual pretty boring talking head government style of film, they tried something different. And so far, the reaction has been fantastic. I'm really thrilled that people seem to like the film a lot.
Oh, great. Well, let's play some of it. We'll play the intro. It's about 3.5 minutes, the first bit. So I'll crank that up and let people listen, and then we can talk about it.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
Yes, water. Slow the flow.
When you build a house, you create what's called an impervious area from the roof and the driveway and the sidewalks. Instead of the water soaking into the ground like it would in a natural environment, it runs off, and it runs off much more quickly and with higher velocity. And so its capacity to carry pollutants is even greater.
WA Public Works study showed that in heavily paved cities, 75% of rainwater runs into the sewer instead of being absorbed by the ground.
It can mobilize pollutants that are already on the surface, like heavy metals or trash, and it typically delivers those pollutants to receiving water bodies like San Francisco Bay or the ocean. And so what we want to do is prevent those pollutants from reaching our receiving water bodies.
In 2005, pollution caused over 5,000 beach closings and advisories in California, most were the result of stormwater runoff.
When we don't deal with stormwater runoff at the source, it ends up in our stream courses, in our water bodies, at a much higher volume, much higher rate, and that can lead to flooding concerns. It's a lot more expensive when you don't deal with runoff at the source.
According to FEMA, the average annual U.S. flood losses in the past 10 years were more than $2.4 billion.
When you think about fish like steelhead and salmon and other types of fish that need good quality habitat to spawn in, that can be severely impacted by stormwater runoff, both in quality and quantity.
Humans cannot help but be drawn to water. It's really kind of a magical feeling for people. The last thing you want to have is your kid get sick. The idea is to get the water there without the pollutants, and therefore the kid will not get sick.
And whether you're close to a water body or not, water's always going to flow downhill. And so we're all connected in the watershed. And so what you do on your property, the runoff that comes off your landscape, is going to end up somewhere.
There are a lot of small-scale efforts that homeowners can implement, which are fun and not too difficult to get started on.
That's a real easy thing to do if you think about your house differently.
That was the first section. Could you hear it okay over your end?
I could hear it fine, and I wanted to let you know, or let your listeners know, that you were reading slates that come up in the film giving kind of scary statistics about stormwater runoff.
Yes, indeed. I didn't want them to miss anything, any of the gory details. But that's it. I mean, we're talking about such huge quantities of water that are coming down on our heads, on our roofs, in our gardens. And really, we've ignored it up to now, really,
well,
to recently.
It's funny that, you know, our great-grandparents and great-great-great-grandparents used to utilize that water. They would have wood water barrels, you know, all around their houses. And we've really, probably in the last few decades, gotten away from that. And that's one of the really easy things that people can do, is simply disconnect their downspouts, and make their water that goes off the roof go into a rain barrel and use it during the dry season. You know, of course, it doesn't go very far, but every little bit helps.
Well, that's it. Yeah, even if you have an apartment, you can put one on there, I would say.
All right, water your indoor plants with a few buckets that you stick out on the deck.
Right, and that's lovely soft water, isn't it?
Exactly. So it's much better to do that than have it run into the storm drain. You know, it really overwhelms our systems, and oftentimes is not treated. It just goes straight into our water bodies, whether they're rivers, lakes, streams, or oceans. And I don't think anyone wants to go into a water body and get sick. It's definitely no fun.
Health is a big factor in this. It's not unhealthy to keep water around. You know, often they'll say, oh, you get bugs or mosquitoes and things like that. But that really isn't a big issue, is it?
No, you know, modern rain barrels actually have a really convenient screw-on lid with a screen on top of it so that the water gets in, but bugs and other things don't. So I have a couple in my own backyard. I've never had an issue with any kind of bugs or smell or anything else. It works really well, and there's a little tap on the side of it you can either hook a hose to, or, you know, use a water bucket and just water that way.
Right, exactly. And now, you've the water boards have actually been active, because one of the things, obviously, is we usually have combined sewers where the storm and the sewage get combined together, certainly like San Francisco and other major cities. Obviously, when the storm comes, it totally overtaxes the system and causes those overflows and things.
Right, exactly. I mean, there's times where it's so overwhelmed that they do have to discharge, unfortunately, and, you know, that's even worse. So anything that people can do to help slow down this water is really important. You know, the water boards have actually come out with new stormwater regulations that all cities and towns have to adhere to. And so, you know, communities are really trying to come up with ways to make sure that they follow these regulations. Otherwise, they get fined. And it's really easy and actually kind of fun if you like working in your garden at all. You know, the film shows projects that different folks have done around the state. You know, one of the guys we interviewed had never gardened in his life. And I think you can see in the film that it's a really pretty garden.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yeah, we'll get to the next section about changing gardens from lawns and things to real water retending is that a real word?
Yes.
Retending places.
Right. So the first guy that we're going to meet is Dave, and he's up in Sacramento, and your listeners will hear what happened when he decided to try and take out his lawn.
Okay, and we're listening to Elizabeth Papin-Silva and her film, Slow the Flow, and I'll read out the slates which come up to give you some of the information.
I'm Dave Roberts, and I own Roberts Landscape. Over the years, I've worked with the county and the River Friendly Landscape Program. I'm president of a group called Eco Landscape California. I'm sort of trying to have my yard different in terms of living what I preach. I'm trying to develop diversity in this yard and address things like water conservation, stormwater runoff, and all those issues. Yes, it's different, and my neighbors either love it or hate it.
My name's Dave Tamayo, and I work for the Sacramento County Stormwater Program. We test water bodies all over Sacramento County, and virtually every time we looked at the water that was running off the streets and also in the creeks and rivers, we found that they were almost always toxic every time we looked at them. So every bit of pollutant that you put into that river, it's coming back around. And even if we're not drinking it, somebody downstream is drinking it. We have a number of different programs to address the different sources of pollutants. And we're using river-friendly landscaping as a holistic way of addressing some of the sources of stormwater pollutants that come off of landscaping or that are associated with landscaping practices. And what we're trying to do now is to focus on early adopters and try and get people who want to do the right thing and are motivated enough to try some new things and show their neighbors and show the community that these things can and do work.
The yard had a lawn, and it was a very conventional landscape. The idea was to break the mold of having a lawn and show that you can have a really, I think, beautiful landscape. The neighbor's first reaction was, well, he's a landscaper, he's redoing the yard. And I'd say a lot of people came up to me and said, well, when are you going to put a new lawn in? And it took me a couple of minutes, but then I'd explain that I wasn't putting back a lawn. And that's when the odd reactions would begin. Well, first, this driveway got taken out. It's called pervious concrete. Here we go with water just running down regular concrete, finished smooth. And it right now, it's halfway to the street already. Now we're going to move over to the pervious concrete. And you can see it just puddles for a moment and just soaks right through. Water is infiltrated into the landscape. It could be channeled off into a swale or a rain garden. It could be put into a cistern for rainwater collection, harvesting. But essentially, it stays on site and we use it.
Well, you can see right here we've got what's called a swale, which is a depression in the landscaping here. And it's made to look like a stream, but besides providing habitat for the steel fish that we've provided here, it also is a design element that helps slow down the water that would want to flow off into the street over there. So instead of going into the gutter and carrying pollutants down into the nearest creek, you actually trap the water here and you get the beneficial use of it.
Well, the fact that there's no concrete sidewalk is twofold. First idea is to create a surface that's much more permeable. We have the spaces in between the stepstones that water can infiltrate in. But secondly, it was also a design element. So I always ask my clients the question, why do they call them leaves? Well, most people finally get it, and that is because you leave them. Once the stuff is broken down, other organisms come up and they bring it in the soil and everybody has a party. It's really, you know, one of the basic building blocks of your landscape is mulch. And it's one of the cheapest things to help keep the weeds down, keep water conservation, keep the soil cool. The plants are much happier with cooler soil and it essentially improves plant health.
When you have natural weed suppression, one thing you don't have to use is herbicides. And we do find herbicides on a regular basis in our local waterways.
We've never put a pesticide on this yard. That's 4 years, no fertilizer. Everything's still healthy.
The US EPA says Americans spend over $1 billion and apply 67 million pounds of pesticides, herbicides, and fertilizers.
We installed a high-efficiency irrigation system, so there are sprinklers out here. Good soil structure allows water to infiltrate, air to infiltrate, and you get less of that runoff, and actually you get better use of water. Very last, as I call it, the icing on the cake, was the plant. The emphasis is toward drought-tolerant California natives, but there are Mediterranean similar climate types of plants.
A four-year City of Santa Monica study showed that a California native planted garden uses 77% less water and requires 68% less maintenance.
A rain garden is an area that's going to have a slight depression, and it's intended to capture the water temporarily and slow it down and give it a chance to soak into your soil.
A rain garden can be built anywhere. Palm Desert, for instance, it might be more appropriate that even here in Northern California, where you have monsoonal rains and you want to collect rain whenever you might get it. So just as you have oases in natural areas of the desert, this is what you would create. What we call river-friendly or California-friendly in Southern California, Bay-friendly in the Bay Area, all these kinds of landscapes are being done everywhere in California.
None of it's going to happen just because the city council made a decision that you're going to do this. It's going to be really something that people are going to learn to accept because they see that it works.
When a homeowner wants to do some of these practices, it might be a challenge. They might face homeowners associations with bylaws that are going to be enforced that don't necessarily jive with what they are proposing and want to do. So it's really important to try to advocate clearly what the benefits are, not only to the homeowner, but to the whole association, the neighborhood, and the planet, if you will. The homeowners in California have a lot of challenges facing them. But some of these techniques for water, they're very easy to implement. There's plenty of opportunities that are relatively low cost, and they're fun.
They're fun. What do you think, Elizabeth?
They really are fun. And so much better for the environment. It's funny that everyone wants a lawn in California when really lawns were a product of British aristocracy that was imported in the United States. I'm sure you could speak about that.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they kind of work okay in the East Coast where it rains year-round, but in California it's really not the best gardening, and they take so much water that we really need. So I encourage everyone to rip up their lawns and put in water-tolerant plants, things you don't need to water very much, and you'll especially find that your water bill goes way down.
Well, that's a good point as a side issue, an important one nowadays, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and as water, you know, becomes increasingly scarce, I mean, we're really lucky this year. It's rained a ton, and our reservoirs are being filled up again. But, you know, that's becoming increasingly rare that we have a good water year. And with an increase in population, you know, we're going to have to seriously think about the way that we garden. And lawns are probably not the best choice any longer.
Yeah, when you think of how many there are and what's being put on them in terms of, the pesticides, herbicides, plus the incredible amounts of water it takes, even the most water-friendly varieties, there's still an amazing amount of water they use.
Exactly, as well as to, you know, make them really green and lush. You got to use a lot of pesticides and fertilizer, and all that stuff goes right into our waterways. And again, it comes back to haunt us. It gets into our bodies. It gets, we're swimming in it, and it's definitely something we really want to try and stop using because it is so toxic. It's terrible.
Exactly. And now the water boards, they inspect the water regularly in our rivers and streams. How does that work?
They do. There's the state water board, and then there's 9 regional water boards, which are arms of the state water board. The 9 regional water boards are actually created by watersheds rather than by location. So you have some kind of what on a map looks a little bit odd, and you wonder why they've been divided up that way, but that's why, because it's due to watersheds and the way the waters run off. And they regularly test water all over the state. Can be a little scary when you, especially in the winter, when you see some of these levels of bacteria and toxins. As a surfer, it's a huge concern of mine, and I have been get sick, at least a couple times a year from pollution in the water, getting in my nose or getting in my mouth. I mean, it's just inevitable that you're gonna, get a little bit somewhere.
Whoa.
And, that's kind of depressing, frankly.
That is. I didn't realize it was that common,
Yeah, it really is. And as the film points out, we have in California over 5,000 beach closures per year. And most of them are because of stormwater runoff pollution.
Oh,
and that they only close them when they're really toxic. So,
It's relative, yeah.
Exactly. And also from an economic standpoint, it's really important because, you know, you're in Santa Cruz and your beaches are closed. You're not going to have tourists come to, you know, your town as much. And so that affects the local economy.
Hmm. That's a good point. You know, I mean, the Water Board hands down these edicts for people to local authorities to do things about their runoff. How is that approached by a city? I know the next section is about a school in Dublin, but how does, say, a city approach doing something about water?
Well, in San Francisco, and we'll get to this towards the end of the film, you know, they're trying a lot of different ways to slow the flow. You know, they require development over a certain number of square feet to do environmentally and stormwater runoff-friendly landscaping practices. Mm. So it's built into the new development, you know, to help try and solve this problem. They also have little mini grants that they give to citizens who want to try and help solve the problem in their neighborhood. And granted, you know, not every community has as large of a tax base as San Francisco. So I recognize that for smaller communities and rural communities, it's a little more challenging. Hmm. It's definitely something that I think all communities should be concerned about, whether, even places that are in the middle of the state where it doesn't seem like they're near any water body. Hmm. You know, everything flows eventually into rivers, streams, and oceans. And so just because you don't live right next to a water body, it you're still affecting it in some way.
Right, exactly. And it was interesting in that last segment showing the difference between regular concrete and pervious concrete. That was quite stunning, how the water just stays right there, doesn't run off. That was very impressive.
Yeah, and increasingly people, especially larger developments, are starting to look at pervious concrete. Of course, it is a little bit more expensive than your regular sidewalks and driveway concrete, but the cost is going down, and the more people that use it, the more the cost will go down. And it's actually a bit more hardy, so you know, it's definitely something that people can look into. And another thing that people can do is just leave space between their concrete. If they still want to use the traditional smooth concrete, just leave a little bit of space in between the pavers.
Oh, that's pretty easy. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Some things are so simple, yeah.
I know. The little things that you can do.
Indeed. Well, let's get back to your film, Slow the Flow. It's about a school in Dublin, over in the East Bay. And I'm speaking with Elizabeth Pepin Silva about her documentary, Slow the Flow.
My name is Tim Bozanowski. I'm the construction program coordinator here at Dublin Unified School District in Alameda County. In 2004, the voters of Dublin passed Measure C, which is a general obligation bond measure that was slated to improve and rebuild its schools. The concepts of green and environmentally friendly practices were part of the Measure C concept approval. And so stormwater pollution prevention is a key, as you know, to those green environmental friendly practices. There are a number of things that we've done to mitigate the stormwater runoff here at Dublin High School. First and foremost, I think, is the grassy swale improvements in the parking lots. When the rainwater comes down onto the parking lot, we can see that the parking lots are sloped in a specific direction, brings that water, that storm water, over to a specific collection point, gathers here at this opening in the curb, gets initially filtered. You can see some of the debris that we've caught already. Then travels into this grassy swale area where it sinks down through into the French drain rock and perforated pipe system beneath. The vast majority of that water then goes back into the ground and never actually gets to a catch basin or pipeline that takes it off campus. Only in those times of extreme heavy rain or long periods of rain where the earth is saturated beneath will any of the storm water that comes out of the parking lot get to those catch basins and leave the site. The grass system within these swales is called tall fescue. Pretty much lives on its own without irrigation. It lives from the water that comes off of the parking lot. The roof drainage system that we've incorporated into our design and construction of the buildings here at Dublin High School collects the water on the roof when it rains, brings it down the building in a pipe system, takes it under the ground, and brings it out here at this basin. This is another example of that filtering process that we do, and again, recharging the aquifer with the rainwater that comes down on the building.
Every 1 inch of rain falling on a 2,400 square foot roof, 1,500 gallons of water runs off.
On our new campuses, we're incorporating such features as large-scale drainage channels, which are planted, lined with natural grasses, native shrubs, native trees that do a number of things. They certainly filter the storm water and actually creates wildlife habitat. At our elementary schools, we're also looking at things such as rainwater collection barrels for our science gardens. Being able to do these things on a school site creates a wonderful teaching tool to where we can take the students and we can show them the improvements that we made and how we've gone about incorporating these environmentally friendly aspects into our campuses, and then it just goes with them for the rest of their lives.
Yes, indeed. It stays with them for the rest of their lives. That's an interesting statement. Tell me about schools and kids.
You know, kids are fascinated by water. I love watching kids around it. I mean, myself, I remember when I was younger, I was howling because my mom would pull me out of the ocean here in San Francisco, and I'm purple with cold, but I still didn't want to get out.
Right.
So having Dublin Public Schools put in these rain barrels and have these really neat, I mean, they're basically drainage ditches, but they look like natural streams, he's right. It is a great teaching tool, and the teachers take them out right there next to the campus and can use it for biology, science, environmental lessons. It's fantastic. You know, another myth that I actually wanted to bring up is that Dave, the landscaper, told me is that, you know, kids need a lawn. And in, you know, I actually really think that that's not true. And in his experience in doing landscaping all over Sacramento County, he's found that when he has left a small lawn for families because they've asked them to leave it, him to leave it for their kids, they've actually invited him back within 6 months saying the kids never play on the lawn. They're always, you know, in the natural part of the garden looking at the bugs and picking the flowers and doing all that, and they've had him pull out the rest of the lawn.
Oh, no.
So I think kids find fascination with nature, you know, any way they can. So lawn definitely isn't needed.
Right, and again, getting to kids at that age, it becomes normal for them.
Exactly. I wanted to mention, actually, that Slow the Flow is playing tomorrow at 2:30, if anyone happens to be in San Francisco, at the San Francisco Green Film Festival, which is a really cool film festival, just started this year.
Oh.
And so it's playing at 2:30 with some other water-related films at the Embarcadero Cinema, which is right near the Ferry Plaza building, so you can go to the fabulous farmer's market and then go to the film festival afterwards.
An excellent idea. Wildlife. Now, that's the one thing. When you retain all that water on your site, that's going to attract wildlife.
It is. We filmed a home in Sacramento that had a lot of rain gardens on it. And it was just your regular suburban home with a, you know, small backyard. But they had simply gone in the back and dug these indentations into the dirt, which allowed the landscape to capture water and hold it for a few days, thus slowing down the flow. And it became an attraction for local birds. And the family said it was wonderful to see all these birds they had never seen in their yard before hang out.
That's immediate feedback.
Exactly. So you're not only doing something good for our waterways, but you're also doing something good for our the critters that are around California.
Right. I mean, that's amazing. Just a few little depressions or holes just scattered around can create this whole different habitat.
Exactly. Like I said, I mean, these are things that you can do, take you a half hour, and simply utilize a shovel in your backyard. Another one is just putting rock where there tends to be a lot of runoff. Rock really slows water down, allows, pesticides and other fertilizers to permeate down into the ground and not run off right into the storm drains. So that's another really cheap, easy thing that you can do around your home.
Right. So in fact, pollution, if it is slowed down, it has a chance to break down before it reaches our rivers and creeks. Is that
exactly?
What happens?
Yeah. Exactly. Nature has provided us with a really good filtering system. We just have to give it a chance to work. You know, we've paved over so much of what used to be a natural sponge that we kind of have to recreate it, if you will.
Right. Yeah, really, we're living in our in artificial habitats ourselves, human habitats.
Exactly.
So we have to adapt.
Right. And, you know, even if you don't care at all about critters, I mean, like I said, simply for your own health and the health of your family, you know, these are really good things to do.
Yes, indeed. Everyone should be doing it. There is no excuse.
Exactly.
So, we're speaking with Elizabeth Pepin Silva about her film, Slow the Flow. Should we go back to the next section? It's about, I think, water boards and urban areas and low-impact developments.
Yes, it talks all about, the next section will talk all about the way we used to do things and the way that the water board and developers and other people are trying to, like I said, do things in a more natural way. Even though we are still doing development, at least we can try and recreate what the great techniques that nature has honed for centuries.
The Water Resource Control Board, together with the regional boards, we work on lots of projects related to stormwater. And one of the exciting areas that's happening right now in stormwater is called low impact development, that aims at controlling the way the built landscape looks after it's built, rather than just focusing on how you're building it and is it eroding sediment while you're being built, and we forget about the fact that the landscape has all been altered. The exciting thing is this new wave of looking at low impact development and approaching the urban landscape as if they were natural watersheds that used to exist before the urban area, and trying to mimic a lot of the natural functions and behavior as we build out.
Historically, engineers would have designed channels to transfer the rainfall. The traditional thinking was to get those stormwater flows out to the ocean as rapidly as possible.
Los Angeles sends 100 million gallons of untreated stormwater runoff into the Pacific Ocean each day during the rainy season.
So here we are in concrete trapezoidal line channels. This is potentially a huge missed opportunity in terms of multi-objective, multi-function. It is flood control only. There's no ecological function, very little water quality function, no recreational and no aesthetic function whatsoever. Even in the middle of winter, we have algae growing. This is due to all the nutrients, the nitrates, the phosphates, that have run straight off our gardens into our storm drainage systems and then empty out into this channel. If this had some ecological function, some water quality function, These nutrients would be treated by the absorption and adsorption of the plants within this channel. This channel could have been designed with a meandering low-flow channel, riparian trees forming a buffer to this whole area, recreational trails going through here, swales to the side of the channel. Now, in recent times, channels like this are becoming less and less common. Designers are thinking about how they can design these channels to be multifunctional, to have not just flood conveyance, stormwater conveyance, but also aesthetic, recreational, ecological, and water quality function.
A lot of different things happen to water in a big scale, and if you encase it in concrete, it doesn't do what it's meant to do.
Exactly. One of the neat things that's starting to happen around the state is, taking what used to be streams that, are now flowing underground and in, through pipes, and freeing them. One of the problems with that is that salmon and other fish cannot easily swim up the streams that way. So they're spending a lot of, time and money to bring back the streams. And it also helps with stormwater runoff because, again, it slows the flow instead of this straight pipe where nothing is absorbed. If you have a meandering stream, it really slows things down.
Yeah, apart from the aesthetic values of just looking at an ugly concrete channel compared to a beautiful riparian area.
Exactly. I mean, you go to L.A. and there's, a lot of those what just look like concrete channels actually used to be streams. It's kind of, sad to see all that concrete. But even down there, they're trying.
Oh, what type of things are they attempting?
At the L.A. River, Los Feliz, by the Los Feliz exit, it's actually one of the very few areas of the L.A. River that's not completely concrete. And they're trying to take out more of the concrete that's there and really bring it back to a more natural stream environment.
So all those films they've been filming down in those in the L.A. River Basin, they won't be able to, there's always car chases down there.
I think it'll be a long time before those are completely done away with. But it's funny, they actually, the EPA just recognized the L.A. River as a real river because for a long time it was not considered a real river.
Oh, dear.
Because of it's been totally filled with concrete. But there was a group of people last year that tried to navigate up the river and made it. And so that helped convince them that it was actually a real river.
Oh, I love it.
I know.
Oh, dear. Now, a regular citizen, how do they get their local authorities to do something if they're slacking on this issue? What's the best way to approach them?
I think firm pressure actually really works. If you can, yourself and your friends and family can put pressure on your local authorities or your homeowners association or whomever you'd like to work with to affect change, I actually really think that it works. For example, in the Sunset District, in the film, you'll meet this gentleman who felt that there was too much concrete there. And he got a small grant from the city and just began working with folks in the neighborhood, just simply talking to them, telling them why it wasn't good to have their entire front yard filled with concrete, and worked with them to start pulling out the concrete and putting back in gardens, which again, slows the flow down. And the Sunset District is right near the ocean, so it was very important to, try and get some more nature back in that neighborhood.
So most cities do have programs ready to go, so it's really just people stepping forward, individuals?
Yes, exactly. And also, I think you know, people asking for these kind of programs. I mean, every community in the state has to adhere to the state water board's water laws. Some cities are more, or towns are more proactive than others, and some cities and towns have more resources than others. So it's simply the community coming together, like, for example, they did in Dublin, and saying, this is important to us. We want this to happen. And they got it on the ballot, and the community passed the ballot measure, and the bond was passed, so the money was there to do it. And so now all the schools have stormwater runoff systems at the schools because it was important to the community.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing, obviously, it may, you know, just the point, it may be unequal in terms of, you know, there's environmental racism. Is there water racism?
What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, often a lot of really filthy environmental factories or places are put into minority areas. And so that's called environmental racism, where, you know,
right,
rather than in a nicer area, they're put in Hunter's Point instead of on Knob Hill type of thing.
Right.
How is there any equity in that with water?
Well, there definitely, this is not a stormwater pollution problem per se, but when I was doing my first film, for the State Water Board and traveling all over the state. One of the regional water boards that I visited was in the Palm Desert, Imperial County area, which is the county that's down at the bottom of the state, you know, at the Mexican border.
Right.
And there is a river there called the New River, which is so heavily polluted that my film partner and I actually got sick simply from standing next to it and filming. And
the thought
that this is a river that's in California, that's supposedly one of the most environmentally active states in the country, that there is a river that exists that's so toxic that you get sick from simply standing next to it is appalling. And the regional water board guy said, yeah, because this river goes through, you know, a poor community, and you think if this river went through San Francisco or downtown Los Angeles or San Diego, this wouldn't be tolerated for a second. There'd be a public outcry.
Right.
But because it's kind of stuck at the bottom of the state in a, you know, poor community,
yep,
it continues.
Mm. Oh, that is sad. Yep.
Yeah. If anyone wants to take a environmental vacation, go down to Mexicali and check out the New River.
Wow.
You'll be appalled.
Yeah, bring your gas mask with you.
Exactly. They have the Border Patrol, if they accidentally fall in the river, goes to the hazmat unit at the local hospital to get hosed off. That's how bad it is.
Oh, my goodness. That is in California. Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
That is, wow. That is scary.
But back to stormwater pollution.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's continue with the film about the man you said took it on himself in the Sunset District of San Francisco to make some changes.
My name is Sarah Minnick, and I work for the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission. One thing that the SFPUC is really concerned about is places where there's a lot of public use of our water bodies in places like Ocean Beach and Baker Beach. So stormwater that is not captured can contribute to overwhelming our system and creating discharges into the Bay or ocean. And we really want to avoid that to protect water quality and public health.
Stormwater runoff can make you sick. In fact, there are a number of beach closures up and down our state's coastline that are a result of bacteria exceedances and other types of exceedances that make the water unfit for swimming.
Wow. 1.5 million people get sick each year swimming off the coast of Los Angeles and Orange County.
We have a lot of outreach and education efforts. We have rainwater harvesting program with rain barrel and cistern subsidies. And then we also have what we're calling urban watershed stewardship grants, where community members who want to do stormwater-related projects in their neighborhoods can apply for small grants to get themselves started. So we're trying to reach all the different interested stakeholders. One of the groups that received funding through our urban watershed stewardship grant was the Surf Riders.
My name is Dan Robinson. I live on Great Highway, right here in the Outer Sunset. It's a very heavily concrete area out here in the Outer Sunset. There's a lot of pavement, there's not a lot of vegetation, there's not a lot of trees. Right now for Surf Rider Foundation, we are involved in an ocean-friendly garden project that we call Plant Don't Pave. Plant Don't Pave is a simple project that basically rips out people's concrete in their front yard and sidewalk strips and replaces it with native shrubs and plants.
And their idea is to work with community members to create permeable spaces in their yards, and we can help recharge the aquifer that's under the Sunset Basin and also prevent stormwater runoff.
The grant pays for everything. The grant pays for the permit, which is about $200, pays for the contractor to come in, and we get donated plants. We put the word out through Plant SF, and in about 2 weeks or so, we had about 150 potential applicants. With our resources, we can do about 20. The demand is there, and it's wildly popular. This project could be done all over the state. But there are grants available in almost every municipality for greening and bringing community together. And it's just a matter of somebody stepping up and taking the lead on it. I really think it is making a difference stopping stormwater runoff. It's a small piece of the bigger puzzle, which is a total transformation of how people think about their properties and the water that's coming onto it and running off of it. This place could be totally transformed into an area that has a lot more green, reduces runoff, and is more of an enjoyable place to live.
My name is Paul Ferraris, and I live here in the Sunset District with my two daughters, Harut and Gannett, and my wife, Margaret. As a parent, the quality of the water is definitely a concern. You can visibly see it. You can see brown water, you can see trash, you can see foam. I think that water is the biggest issue on our planet right now. I feel guilty wasting water. When we bought this house, the whole backyard was concrete. I saw a perfect place for a garden. I had never done any real gardening before. So actually, when I first started, I had a lawn right where I'm sitting right here. There was just a little lawn, and I figured that was good for the dog or for the kids to play on. The lawn was consuming all of my time. I had to mow it. I had to weed whack it. I had to water it constantly. If I missed a day or two, you'd have brown spots or it would just start dying. So it was just a nuisance.
A typical California suburban lawn consumes 10,000 gallons of water above and beyond rainwater each year.
I just put in some more natives and took up that space and made a couple paths and a little sitting area, and it's been great. Everybody has a huge lawn. Everything's irrigated, and people don't see the natural beauty in what's around, what's already there, the native plants. You know, if you plant native plants, they pretty much take care of themselves. You don't really have to do anything. You don't even have to water them, so it doesn't really cost anything.
It's real good.
You know, all the water that comes down and lands on our roof, it's stored into a bucket. I get one day's worth of rain, and I can pour it out into the garden. There's so much wasted water, and the fixes are so easy.
I got one.
You can hear Paul's children in the background catching bugs in his backyard, which is something they love to do.
Yeah, it didn't look like they were missing a lawn.
No, no, certainly not. He said they never used it. They're much more excited to pick flowers and chase bugs than the lawn itself. So out the lawn went.
That's very interesting, isn't it? That just the habits we get into, again, of you have to have a lawn and nothing else will do. It's fascinating. It's like the last thing we need.
Exactly. I wanted to let your listeners know that if they want more information or to get Surfrider Foundation has put out a wonderful ocean-friendly gardening booklet, and there's also Sacramento County put out a great river-friendly landscaping booklet. Pretty much the same, both are the same, talking about easy, simple things you can do around your home, and it shows step-by-step how to do them. Techniques in these booklets. You can go to the State Water Board's website, which is www.swrcb.ca.gov/stormfilm, and there's links to all these different pamphlets and also other websites that you can go to learn more about ways that you can slow the flow.
Yes, indeed. And what an amazing thing. The Surfriders, they had, 150 applicants, but they only had, I suppose, enough funds for 20. That's what a response.
I know. It really does show that people, when given the opportunity, want to do the right thing. And so that's what I was saying, that, you know, if you go to your local communities and ask for these things, definitely the demand is there. It's, again, just the government officials being made aware of it and making it a priority.
Exactly. That's the thing, isn't it? It's the constant drumbeat of this is what we need.
Exactly. I mean, also what I wanted to point out is that, you know, we worry constantly about drought and about, you know, less water. But I think your listeners should also think about the water that we do have and the quality of that water. Mm. Because, as you know, there's less and less water. The water that we do have needs to be kept clean. And doing these simple practices, one of the ways to keep that water clean so that we have drinking water.
Indeed. I mean, what I suppose this hard to gauge. I mean, the percentages, where is the tipping point? I mean, how many households can do these things where until we really make a major impact?
Well, they're actually starting to see that it is making a difference in areas where there's been development that utilizes stormwater reduction practices. Mm-hmm. They do see a reduction in the toxins that are in the nearby creeks and rivers. So it's measurable. It shows up on when they go to test the water.
So even in on small scale projects, it still makes a difference.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely.
That's incredible. So it's up to us to build it up then.
Exactly.
And we're down to the last just finale, in fact, of the film. So should we play that, and then we can just chat after that?
That sounds great.
For people that have been working in the stormwater field, this is kind of a magical moment, because we've been waiting for the time to shift the focus from the end of the pipe and how to control pollutants to making neighborhoods and cities and urban areas actually build and look and behave differently. So there's a real shift in the way we're thinking, and this is exciting. And so what we're trying to do is get as many of those uses in that are beneficial along the way between where that rainfall's hitting a roof and where it might make it out to the river.
When we talk about global climate change, we can look at things as simple as deforestation. Those are big things that are really hard for people to grip because it's not in their backyard or their front yard. But when you come home and it's right here in your yard, and you can show people that you can care right in your own front yard, you don't have to worry about saving the rainforest or whatever. You can start right here at home. That is powerful. It brings it closer and easier.
as the world gets more and more populated and we need to be more and more conscious of what we're doing to the planet we live on, it has to start with us.
The homeowners really are the solution. So instead of waiting for government to come in and solve this water resource problem, this is a great opportunity for people to take a little bit of control over their water management world, and they're providing a communal public trust benefit at the same time.
Five things you can do. Disconnect your downspouts, install a river or ocean-friendly garden, capture rainwater and use it, build a rain garden or swale, and install pervious pavement, driveways and sidewalks. And that was Slow the Flow by Elizabeth Pepin Silva.
And again, if people want to order a copy for free, they can just go to the website, swrcb.ca.gov/stormfilm, and the State Water Board will be happy to send you as many copies as you would like.
Oh, that is very generous. Hey, it's our money. We might as well go out there and ask for it.
Actually, the film was funded by money that they get from violations.
Oh.
So when people have been naughty and polluted our waterways, it goes into a fund to help educate people about water issues, and that's where the money came from. So it actually was not from our very limited money that we have in the state right now.
Right, but people have been bad, yeah.
Exactly.
Indeed.
Exactly.
And way too many of those, I'm sure. You know.
Yes.
And let everyone know about the Green Festival in San Francisco, where your film's going to be shown tomorrow.
Yes, tomorrow is the San Francisco Green Film Festival. It runs through Sunday. It's the first year, and they have an amazing lineup of films and activities and booths that you can learn all about different green activities. And Slow the Flow is screening with several other water films at 2:30 tomorrow, Saturday, at the Embarcadero Cinemas, right near the Ferry Plaza building in San Francisco.
Oh, beautiful. Good reason to go down there tomorrow.
Yes, and if people want to check out my other films or my surf photographs or anything else or reach me, they can go to my website, which is www.potreroindustries.com, or just Google Elizabeth Pepin Silva and it'll come up.
Oh, great. And what's in the future for you? More films? What are you up to?
Well, I'm actually relocating to Hawaii for about 6 months while my husband, who's in the solar energy field, oversees a giant solar project there. And I'm going to be trying to raise funds for my next film, which is called Wasted, which is all about sewage and things getting into our water supplies. Our sewage systems are some of the least funded of our infrastructures, and it's starting to cause us problems. So I'm going to take a look at that and try and understand what the problems are and things that people around the state are trying to do to help solve that problem.
Oh, that's an excellent thing to do. Wow, that is such need for that.
I don't think people really know what happens when they flush their toilets. I never really thought about it until I went and filmed at a sewage treatment plant, and I just became kind of fascinated. It's a kind of weird subject, but definitely I think people need to start thinking about those sort of things.
It's true. You see some very strange sights at sewage. It's amazing what you see, actually. I'm a mechanical engineer, and I've been to many. And especially on a Monday morning, it's an amazing, you can see some amazing things there.
You can't believe what people flush down their toilets. It's not just human waste, believe me.
Exactly. Oh, dear. Well, thank you so much, Elizabeth, for sharing your time and your fabulous Slow the Flow documentary.
Thank you so much. much, Arnold. It's an honor to be on your radio show.
Oh, it's a pleasure. We need more and more people like you to show that it can be done, and it's all down to us. You don't have to wait for anybody else to do it.
Exactly. So I hope everyone goes out in their garden tomorrow with their shovel and make a few indentations, create rain gardens so that they'll have little, lovely little ponds. Tiny ponds to attract the birds and slow the flow.
Exactly. It's that easy.
Thank you so much. Have a good night.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye-bye.